an anti-Zionist Jew, son of a profoundly Zionist Jew, does everything he can to defeat Zionism. But in the end, a non-Jew by the name of Sir Mark Sykes helps save Zionism. Even the Zionist leaders themselves were astonished by all this. Is this only politics? I do not believe it is. It is, of course, providence. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 171, The Battle Over the Balfour Declaration, part 2. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. An important moment in Jewish history can be discovered in a fascinating memorandum in the Moses Gaster Papers, recording a meeting in February 1917 at the home of this spiritual leader of the British Sephardic community at 193 Maida Vale, an address not well known today, but which surely has to be one of the most significant addresses in the history of Zionism. In continuing to tell this story, I am, as before, drawing on the writings of the historian Jonathan Schneer, Norman Lebrecht's book Anxiety and Genius, and The Cousinhood by Chaim Bermatz. Attending this meeting at Moses Gaster's home were Mark Sykes, Chacham Gaster, Chaim Weizmann, Lord Lionel Walter Rothschild, one of the members of the British Jewish elite that was converted by Weizmann to the Zionist cause, as well as a group of Weizmann loyalists, including the journalist Harry Sacker, the Zionist George Bentwich, and one of the most important, though today not well-known, people in the history of Zionism, Nachum Sokolov. Even though Gaster was, according to these minutes, the official chairman of the gathering, nevertheless, as both Schneer and Lebrecht point out, the meeting was dominated by Weizmannites, highlighting how he, Weizmann, not the Chacham, was at this point taking charge of the diplomacy. We can tell from the conclusion of the minutes that Weizmann's colleague, Nachum Sokolov, was chosen to meet with the French diplomat François-Georges Picot to advance the cause. Sokolov was a Zionist journalist who had left Eastern Europe after the outbreak of the war and had worked in London at Weizmann's side. And what emerges from this meeting is a series of diplomatic engagements by Sokolov that have been forgotten and are astonishing. This point has been made by the historian Martin Kramer. At this meeting, Sykes told the gathered Zionists that the major obstacle to achieving their goal was France. Kramer writes, quote, "And so Sokolov went forth, first to engage with Picot in London, then back and forth to Paris, with an unexpected detour to Rome, all in close coordination with Sykes. It was a daunting mission. Sokolov's task was to persuade the French, not just of the feasibility of the Zionist project, but also of the virtues of a British protectorate over Palestine. On the face of it, both propositions should have seemed preposterous to the French. Zionism enjoyed little support among French Jews, and the French had already been promised a share of Palestine, equal to Britain's in the Sykes-Picot Accord, the details of which Sykes had kept secret from Sokolov and Weizmann. Yet," Kramer continues, "Sokolov managed not only to disarm suspicion of the Zionist program, he even succeeded in extracting statements of support," end quote. As Kramer goes on to describe, Sokolov met with Picot and then met more than once with Picot's boss, the Secretary General of the French Foreign Ministry, Jules Cambon. And while we think a great deal about the Balfour Declaration, no one ever speaks about a very similar letter that was issued earlier, noted by Kramer, in June 1917, from Jules Cambon, representing the French Prime Minister, which states the following, quote, "You were good enough to present the project to which you are devoting your efforts, which has for its object the development of Jewish colonization in Palestine. You consider that, circumstances permitting, and the independence of the holy places being safeguarded on the other hand, it would be a deed of justice and of reparation to assist, by the protection of the Allied powers, in the renaissance of the Jewish nationality, in that land from which the people of Israel were exiled so many centuries ago. The French government, which entered this present war to defend the people wrongly attacked, and which continues the struggle to assure the victory of right over might, can but feel sympathy for your cause, the triumph of which is bound up with that of the Allies," end quote. Note well, ladies and gentlemen, this was before the Balfour Declaration, and it set the stage for it. Martin Kramer, who cites this, has noted that we tend to see the Declaration as an independent expression of Britain, but it actually took place in the context of diplomatic assurances of other countries, including France's interactions with Sokolov and, as we shall see next week, in the diplomacy of Louis Brandeis on behalf of the Wilson administration. Sokolov's achievements were important and came out of this meeting at the home of Chacham Gaster. And this, as we saw yesterday, happened because of the original introduction of Weizmann by Chacham Gaster to Herbert Samuel. With the French on board, and, as we shall discuss in another episode, with the support of America assured, the British government prepared to declare its support for Zionism in Palestine. But Edwin Montague, the anti-Zionist Jewish member of the government, decided to have one last say. He had just been appointed Secretary of State for India and was preparing to travel overseas, but before he did, he wrote a memorandum that was titled, quote, "On the Anti-Semitism of the Present British Government," end quote. The most high-ranking Jew in the British cabinet, Montague, argued in this memo that in supporting Zionism, the British government was engaging in anti-Jewish activity. Montague wrote, quote, "Zionism has always seemed to me to be a mischievous political creed untenable by any patriotic citizen of the United Kingdom," end quote. It's an astonishing thing for a Jew to say, but it is even more astonishing for Edwin Montague, considering that he was the son of Samuel Montague, who was himself incredibly sympathetic to Zionism. Montague then concluded his memo by arguing that because some Zionists were from Germany and Austria, therefore the movement should be seen as led by enemies of Britain. Edwin Montague wrote, quote, "I feel that the government are asked to be the instrument for carrying out the wishes of a Zionist organization largely run, as my information goes, at any rate in the past, by men of enemy descent or birth, and by this means have dealt a severe blow to the liberties, position, and opportunities of service of their Jewish fellow countrymen," end quote. But, thank God, all of Edwin Montague's interventions were in vain. On November 2, 1917, Balfour sent his famous letter to Lord Rothschild. It may seem strange that such an important document would be sent to a member of Anglo-Jewry who, while certainly wealthy and influential, was not the most active Zionist leader or most representative of the movement. But if the letter was sent to the Lord, it was because, as someone somewhere put it, the Jewish people themselves had no address, but Lord Rothschild had a very nice address indeed. Thus it was to Rothschild that the famous words were written, "His Majesty's government view with favor the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people, and will use their best endeavors to facilitate the achievement of this object." Edwin Montague, meanwhile, was heartbroken. He had tried so hard to deny Jewish peoplehood, and in the end, a group of non-Jews in the British government had, thanks to the efforts of both Jewish Zionists like Gaster, Weizmann, and Herbert Samuel, and non-Jewish Zionists like Mark Sykes, affirmed that the Jews were a people and had a connection to the Holy Land that was worthy of affirmation. Montague had done all he could to deny Jewish peoplehood, to exorcise his father from himself, but he had failed. The words of the historian Jonathan Schneer are apt. Quote, "Poor Edwin Montague, for all his worldly success, he embodied the dilemmas and tragedies of early 20th century assimilated British Jewry," end quote. Montague further wrote in his diary that, quote, "The government has dealt an irreparable blow to Jewish Britons, and they have endeavored to set up a people which does not exist," end quote. But of course, Edwin Montague was wrong, and the striking series of political events connecting Herbert Samuel to Chacham Moses Gaster, to Weizmann, and this group to Mark Sykes, as well as the events leading to Herbert Asquith losing the premiership, all highlight remarkable features of this story. And are these merely political events? Ladies and gentlemen, you tell me. A man does everything to stop the Zionist cause, but in the end, his choice in marriage, Edwin Montague's marriage to Venetia Stanley, ends up helping to ensure that the Balfour Declaration comes into being. An anti-Zionist Jew, son of a profoundly Zionist Jew, does everything he can to defeat Zionism, but in the end, a non-Jew by the name of Sir Mark Sykes helps save Zionism. Even the Zionist leaders themselves were astonished by all this. Nachum Sokolov later reflected at the marvelous nature of the story. As he put it, quote, "A certain Sir Mark appears, he makes some inquiries, and then expresses a wish to meet the Zionist leaders," end quote. Is this only politics? I do not believe it is. It is, of course, providence. In studying this larger story, we can find in it a source of religious faith itself. And as we shall see, there is one other side to this tale, another aspect of this story, other events across the Atlantic that helped bring the Balfour Declaration into being, a tale that took place in America. We shall tell this story in the week to come and find further evidence for providence in the story of the Holy Land and Jerusalem. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together next week, wishing you a Shabbat Shalom, signing off.